Hey everybody, time for another Shop Talk show. It's episode number 252, and we have two special guests on who we'll introduce in a minute right after the intro here that we picked out from. There's a conference coming up of An Event Apart Seattle. An Event Apart has sponsored the show before. I personally, Chris, am speaking at lots of Event Aparts this year. It's going to be a big part of my life this year, and I thought we would take the opportunity to have some people who will also be at AEA Seattle with me and talk about what they're going to talk about. Let's talk about conferences. Let's talk about An Event Apart. Let's talk about people who speak at conferences having a thing, and how, like, can you have a thing? Does everybody have to have a thing? How do you pick a thing? How do you pick a good thing? What's interesting about conferences? What's interesting about AEA specifically? All that kind of stuff. That's what we're going to talk about. This episode is brought to you in part by Rollbar, error tracking for your web apps. We'll tell you a little bit more about that later in the show. Totally valuable software. And CodePen, of course. But, you know, for now, Mr. Dave, let's kick it off.
Hey there, Shopping Maniacs! Thank you for downloading this. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer.
Wow, I wasn't expecting the robot voice, Dave, or whatever that was, but hey, hi, howdy.
I don't know why I suddenly got concerned about our bandwidth bill, but I did. But we don't even pay for the bandwidth. Shout out to SimplecastFM or .com now for
.com. They upgraded. Us, so. We had to buy the .com once for CodePen. It was very expensive. Another story for another time. This week, we, like I said in the intro, we have two special guests on to of different people in the world, but together for one kind of specific reason is that, like I said, I'm going to be at, and Dave's spoken at before, this conference called An Event Apart. This season is just about to kick off of them. They're in a bunch of cities throughout the U.S. I'm going to be at a bunch of them, and I thought, since it's going to be such a big part of my life this year, maybe we'll do an episode or some episodes of, with different people who are also going to be at some of them, talking about what they're going to talk about and stuff. So our two, without further ado, Unicorn Kravitz. Hey.
Yes, Una. I love that intro. Yeah. Hi, y'all.
Hey. Somehow we've never had Una on the show before, which is a wild mistake that we're fixing now. And you, and it's a bit of a crossover podcast as well, because you have a podcast. Do you want to tell us quickly about you and that?
Yeah, sure. So I have a podcast called Tools Day. It's 20 minutes of tech tools, tips, and tricks on Tuesdays at 2. Kind of have been going over 20 minutes lately, but it's okay because there's just so much good content to talk about. It's basically about the web, how it changes super fast, and all the new tools that are coming out, just so you can like stay on top of the curve with little tidbits here and there.
That's toolsday.io, and you're at the moment at DigitalOcean, right?
Yeah, I found a room to record in here. DigitalOcean is a cloud infrastructure company which is doing some awesome things for developers, simplifying cloud infrastructure. So it's been a blast working here so far.
Fantastic. And our second guest is Crystal Higgins. Hey, Crystal.
Hey, Chris.
Hey. Google.
Yeah.
What's that?
I know, it's this small company no one's ever heard of. It's up and coming. I have big hopes for it. But yeah, I've been working at Google for a few years now on Android Wear, and I focus on UX design.
That's fantastic. And you and UX design, and I don't know, I always think of this concept of onboarding with you. I guess that's what you've been talking about and writing about for quite a while now, right?
Yeah. Onboarding's kind of my passion area. I spoke quite a bit at An Event Apart last year on it, and then I'm trying a new spin on the topic upcoming at Seattle. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, fantastic. So maybe let's stick with that for just a second. The title of the talk will be Onboarding for Any Situation. Do you want to give us a sneak peek?
Yeah. That sounds like it sounds very ominous and crazy thorough. But we're going to talk about how, sometimes we think of onboarding, we just think of the first run, but onboarding and the techniques kind of used for it can be leveraged for a bit of a long-term system for guidance and education, because people and products are always kind of growing. So this talk's going to kind of look at how you can leverage those techniques for the long term.
So, and you talk about it in an abstract way, or do you find it difficult to talk about it in an abstract way? I imagine that, Una's at DigitalOcean, like, what is it like to sign up for DigitalOcean for the very first time? And there's always that kind of awkward moment that you're signing up and you're also kind of learning about how they do things there. And then like you've completed signing up, but it can be kind of a bummer moment because you have done nothing. There's nothing to look at. If there's some kind of dashboard, there's nothing in it. And that's the kind of onboarding you're talking about, right?
Yeah. It's definitely about how, sometimes we have very, limited views of what onboarding is. We go, oh, we just give them that tutorial, or we just get them to sign up and we're good. Everyone parties, high fives, and, retention numbers don't hold up. So this is about talking about how onboarding continues to follow up and help someone acclimate in an experience, for their first few days, weeks, months, however long is right for that user and that product.
The idea being if you do a good job, they're happy customers and probably long-term customers.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to just make the first sale if you're an e-commerce company. You want people to come back and shop multiple times, or whatever your kind of success metric is. You're looking for that long-term engagement, not just someone to do, an action one time.
Is there discussions about that, Una, at DigitalOcean? Is there an onboarding team?
Well, it's funny because lately I've been on a front-end infrastructure team, and part of what we're doing is internal onboarding. So it's not how to onboard a user onto your product, but our question that we're trying to solve is how can we get a new engineer onboarded onto developing in the project? So it's very similar in the sense of I feel like there's a lot of human psychology behind this. How can you minimize the amount of effort to get started? But it's just the different side of that coin. I'm really looking forward to this talk.
If I got hired at DigitalOcean, what is it like for me to start working there?
Right, because you're working in kind of this robust ecosystem where you have to have the right Ruby environment, you have to have this Ember environment set up, you have to make sure that your repos are talking to each other, you have to see your databases. So how do we make that less complicated so that the startup time could be much faster?
Oh, that's great to think about, because in a sense it's... I don't know, you're a really expensive customer in a way.
Yeah, exactly. It's that startup time. But I've really found that technical diagramming has been really helpful and interesting in this regard. So I recently have gotten into illustrating parts of how Dio works internally, and I've gotten a lot of positive feedback about how that's super helpful. Because it's hard to just kind of look at text or a README file and understand how all the parts kind of mingle and interact. But if you draw it out and physically show how things are connected, people have a different way of understanding when they look at something visual than when they look at text or are hearing it from somebody. Yeah.
Diagramming, onboarding diagram, or I don't know. I like that.
Yeah. But it's a little different than onboarding a product, because everyone's going to click close your pop-up screen if you just show them a diagram immediately. The talk about onboarding should be really interesting, because there's a lot of psychology behind what people like to see and don't really want their flow interrupted.
But just to switch gears for a minute so we can figure out how we can co-mingle these ideas, you're coming up at Seattle, your talk is The Joy of Optimizing, which probably isn't about onboarding at all, at least not directly. What is it about?
So The Joy of Optimizing, inspired by Bob Ross's Joy of Painting, It's all about image optimization because images are the largest percentage of media items size that exists on the web today. So my talk is really looking at how we can optimize these images, send our users fast, snappy websites by like eliminating this really big chunk of data that we're sending. And the talk is kind of about like optimization techniques. It's about new image formats that are coming out, like WebP and WebM. It talks about like different types of
WebM.
Like GIFs.
I don't even know what that is.
Well, WebM is like video format. So like WebP was inspired by WebM in the way that it kind of saves like the difference between frames, and WebM was like the initial project that, yeah. So they're interrelated. Onto was the initial company that was developing them. I think Google took over and is now developing the WebM, WebP formats as they continue. And there's a lot of new open source formats that are pretty interesting, like FLIF and BPG that might come out soon. So lots of exciting things out there to help with this huge image load problem.
That's great. So that, I mean, that's so focused for a conference talk. It should be wonderful. I feel like the best conference talks I've ever seen are taken. Not that there's not, you know, 20 hours of material here. There could be, but you know, I feel like a lot of times conference talks bite off a little bit more than, or you could see a talk that's all about performance in general and 3 minutes of which are about image optimization. But you're going to make image optimization the whole shebang.
Yeah, I think it's a really good topic for both designers and developers to really get a solid understanding in, because it's a common ground in which both of these fields can speak. So there's a lot there, and I'm really excited to kind of like share this and make sure that people understand how to fix this thing and make the web a little faster.
Just yesterday, I posted a blog post. I had like 5 photos from my phone that I like emailed to myself to like put in the blog post, really official. And from my phone, it was like 5 megs, and I was about to drop like 5 megs of photos into this post because that's just what my phone spit out. And I was like, I should just run it through a thing. You know, I was like borderline not gonna because I was like lazy. Oh my, it dropped each photo from like 1 meg down to like less than 100K. And I was just like, oh wow, I could have really just messed up everything. Yeah. It was, man.
There was a great quote that I heard, and it went like, never, I think it was you who said it, Dave, at a talk in Austin back when I lived there. And you said, never put an image on the web that hasn't been optimized. And I was like, yes, that.
That sounds right. That sounds good.
It does.
We'll go with that one.
Yeah. No, I mean, why? Yeah, it's tough. You like it. It's unless it's automated, you're not going to really.
That's what I find.
You just don't want
so much automation that's possible that it's like, can't computers just do all of this? Literally all of it, please. Anyway, so there's a note here, Dave, about our guest, and all it says is, in quotes, a thing.
So, but maybe we should give some context around this. So, so one thing we are thinking about, and you know, y'all are all speaking at an event apart this year, and we kind of were like, what, you know. For those who don't know, Event Apart is kind of through a List Apart, sort of related, kind of a Jeffrey Zeldman, Eric Meyer production. And I think one thing that sort of sets an Event Apart from kind of a lot of conferences is a lot of the speakers have a quote unquote a thing. A lot of speakers have a thing, like a thing they're kind of diving deep into or passionate about or kind of digging into. And I kind of thought it might be fun to hear about your thing, what you do, what's the thing you're kind of into right now and talking about. But then how do we, you know, maintain interest in a thing, or how do we learn about a thing? How do we dive in and learn? So I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about that sort of stuff.
Crystal, I feel like onboarding is a pretty specific thing, you know, or getting at with that, do you?
Absolutely, it's definitely a thing, you know, Onboarding for me, I can't quite pinpoint the exact time I got interested in it, but I think it kind of just came from, I come from a narrative animation and illustration background. And I think it came from a lot of stuff I was doing there where, you know, storytelling in a linear sense wasn't really working for me as much as I kind of liked stories. And as I even got into UX design and everything, you know, as my career has been focused on, I just kind of gravitated towards it because it's such an important and often very ambiguous point in time. And how I maintain interest in it? Well, it's kind of like cheating, because onboarding, you know, you can kind of use any new experience as a way to keep you interested. And like, you know, I could do something completely unrelated to like tech or products and be able to say like, oh, that was an interesting first time experience. That was an interesting way they got me involved in this, travel or other kind of like learning course. And so that kind of is how I keep that fresh in my mind.
Interesting. So like a new, like experiencing your thing through the reverse lens, I guess, it kind of energizes you about your thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, last week, for example, I traveled to Singapore, which was my first time in Asia ever. And, you know, that brought up a lot of inspiration about, you know, everything from having to get a SIM card and use like a new mobile management app to, trying to ride the public transit and figure out the system there. Like all of that stuff kind of fed back into like, wow, these are some concepts I haven't thought about before, or these are some kind of unique ways of getting, you know, tourists into new places. So yeah, that kind of stuff helps keep that energized.
I have opinions about onboarding too, because I think about it and stuff, you know.
Good.
Yeah. But let's say, you know, because everybody experiences it so often. You sign up for a new thing, whatever it is. It probably happens like once a week at least, you know, or sometimes you go on a little rampage and you're downloading a bunch of apps on your phone. And then you have to do the onboarding for every single one of them. And I always have a hot take on it. You know, it's always like you sign up and you're just like, this is dumb, or this is awesome, or this is, you know, like, or you have like just quick judgmental feelings about how they did with their onboarding. And I wonder how often that translates to, like, how often a hot take is translates to the correct data. Like, if I think an app had bad onboarding, but then I used it for 2 years, it's like I was maybe wrong about that. Or can the onboarding be bad? But that's okay because the app is so good that it didn't matter.
Well, you know, first impressions definitely matter. But if you know, it all kind of depends on why you've downloaded an app or done a certain thing. So, you know, for example, if a friend has referred you to a certain app, maybe they sent you a link to share something, or it's a, I don't know, like a promo for a Lyft ride, you know, you're going to be a little bit more inclined to stick with it, regardless of some of those initial impressions. But if you're someone who's just trying something for the first time, you took a chance on a website or an app, and that first experience isn't right, then that could put you off a little bit for sure.
It's also a product differentiation. Like, you have to get to the point where you're using an app for a long enough time to recommend it to someone else. So like, how do you get a user onboarded instantly and like enjoying that application and that process? And now with all these startups that are kind of doing similar things, I think that the onboarding process is even more relevant and important.
Absolutely. Onboarding is kind of in some ways when done well, it might be invisible. It kind of like onboarding at a company, you know, you were kind of talking about that a little bit earlier, you know, but it's definitely something about just kind of getting people into the mode of, you know, creating or consuming whatever your product's focused on doing. And kind of along that way, seeding in additional ways for them to expand on their knowledge or engage with deeper levels of action.
Can I tell you an onboarding story?
Please.
Yes, please.
So went to a bar And my friend Jan is, he's like, you got to sign up for Snapchat. And I just was like, no, I'm like a 36-year-old man. I like don't, but he convinced me to, and I onboarded. And it, you know, the thing about Snapchat is it's like fun, right? Like fun is the like number one, I guess, adjective to describe it. But I'm onboarding and it's like, hey, cool, give me your first, last name. All right, cool, awesome. Hey, dude, give me your contacts. Why not? Right? Like, let's find your friends. I'm like, okay, sure. Hey, tell me your birthday because I like to send you a birthday thing. I'm like, sure, why not? And it's like, hey, by the way, put in a credit card. That would be so cool if you put in a credit card. And I just was like, no. Like, I just was like, you have like my birthday, my credit card, my contacts, my name, my like address, my like borderline. Like, the only thing you're missing is my social security number. And I just was like, no. Like,
they had you for a while. Like, you were partying for a minute.
No,
this sounds like some sneaky like social engineering.
Yeah, I was just giving them data and like social, like, you know, whatever, marketing data. Like, yeah, put me in a demographic. I don't care. That's great. Let's do it. And like, I just, why did I do that? I, you know, and then, but I finally caught on at the credit card. I was like, I think you're going too far, Snapchat.
I didn't even know they would take it. Why? For what?
Like, to buy a filter or something. Snapcash. I don't know, but Snapcash, whatever that is.
I could be wrong. Like, I don't even have Snapchat. Right.
I was like having fun. And then I'm like, all of a sudden I was like, no, wait, I don't like this. I don't like how much information they have on me. So.
Yeah. I think sometimes like, you know, a misconception with onboarding is that it's the same as like, you know, orientation. So at a company, right, you start and you get that first day, which is like the download of every single piece of information about the company. And they make you fill out a bunch of forms, paperwork, whatever that you may never see again. And I think a lot of, you know, a lot of apps or products, they kind of take that perspective. They're like, oh, we'll just give a lot of forms. We'll have them fill that stuff out, you know, these NDAs, these credit cards, whatever it is. And then we never have to worry about it. But they, you know, they don't remember that people tend to balk when they're asked for so much information out of kind of a trusting context. And onboarding is really about kind of like gradually building up towards all those things you might ask for later. It's all about expectations. Maybe credit cards were pushing it a bit.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, like if you're a kid or something and your friends are on it and you just like, oh, if I just give them this thing, I could be like go back and partying with my friends on the Snapchats. And like, you're probably just willing to give this information or just kind of like just doing it to get past the roadblock. But I guess how do you manage then this like asking too much, not asking too much, educating too much, not educating too much? Because I mean, I know back to the hot takes, I like log into something and then like, you know, it's like, cool, I'm in. And then the screen fades to black and then coach marks appear. And it's like, oh God, I got to go through this and I got to click every single one to make it disappear. How do you do like a between a good and a bad?
Yeah. Don't get me started on coach marks. Those are like my least favorite things ever and probably the least accessible of almost all onboarding patterns I can imagine. But, you know, it's going to be different for every product. And it's going to be a little, you know, to the extent that you can sort of figure out users' motivations, it might be a little bit different for users. But, you know, what I've always evangelized is trying to guide through interaction, which means kind of letting people progress through your interface or through your flow, whatever that might be, and at opportune moments using kind of the surrounding activity of what someone's doing, those are the times when you might prompt for additional bits of information. So, you know, I guess something like guest checkout is always a good example of this, right? Someone prior to deciding to check out on a site, they've been shopping, they've been putting some items in their cart, and it's time to check out. And yeah, you can sign in or even create an account if you really want. But you could also just go ahead and purchase the items as a guest. And after you've kind of completed all that, then you get the option to save some of that information that you entered during checkout into an account. And so it's kind of just more of that gradual kind of meeting you where you are approach to things instead of demanding a lot of stuff up front or assuming that you need to kind of point out everything, you know, in the beginning before someone started diving in and realizing the value that you offer.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Rollbar. That's rollbar.com/shoptalkshow. That's the URL you want to go to get 3 months of their bootstrap plan for free. Rollbar is all about error tracking. It does an amazing job of that. So you know, it's really easy to integrate too, and it integrates into any application, you know, JavaScript, which is Ember, Angular, Backbone, Node.js, or your Ruby stack with Rails, .NET, PHP, even Flash, iOS, anything. They've got it all covered. You put it in there and it starts capturing the errors that your app throws, which it's definitely throwing some, believe me, and lets you know about them. So not only so you need to know what these errors are in order to fix them, gives you the stack trace and all that, it groups them intelligently too. So if your app is like throwing like thousands of this one kind of error, but it's kind of minor, it's good to know. It's good to not get an email about every single time that error happens thousands of times. That's annoying. You know you need to fix it, but maybe it's lower priority than some other kind of bug and allows you to prioritize and that type of thing. It integrates with like Slack and Jira tickets and all that type of stuff too. So you kind of get to decide like, okay, put this type of error here or whatever. It allows you to, you know, gives you the information you need to fix the errors that are happening in your app and prioritize them and know about them, but not be too annoyed by them and stuff like that. Just a couple of lines of code to integrate into your app, whatever that app is. Oh, it's kind of amazing software. Thank you, Rollbar. Again, the URL is rollbar.com/shoptalkshow. $87 value to sign up for their bootstrap plan for free. I wonder if we could, for the people listening out there who haven't spoken at any let's talk about conferences just for a sec. That and this idea of a thing that we brought up. Because I remember feeling this like early days of like maybe I'll get invited to speak at a conference, but maybe not certain types of conferences. I probably will never write a book because I don't like have a thing. Like I know I'm more of a generalist. I don't know. I haven't like dug into one kind of thing like that. I think there's people out there thinking of that. Do you need to have a thing? Did all y'all consciously think of, I think I'm going to dig super hard into this thing and that'll just be me for a while.
I don't think that you necessarily need to have like a specific thing that you're known for. I feel like I'm sort of more of a generalist, kind of in between having a thing and a generalist, because I like to sort of experiment a lot and try a variety of different mediums. And maybe that's kind of like my thing, like the intersection of design and development. But like if you look at sort of the talks that I've given in the past, they've been a wide spectrum. The first talk I ever gave, I was like 20 and I was at a Ruby conference and I was like, I'm going to give a talk because I want to try it out. Like, I think this is valuable information. It was just a purely design talk about global like design and internationalization, and sort of my experience with my family who's Russian and how like seeing my family try to interact with these applications and like these voice recognition things that really wouldn't work. I thought that was an interesting piece of knowledge that I wanted to share. And then after that, I started talking about open source design and why we don't have designers working in the open source community, and then design systems, which is definitely a mix of like design development, like how do you create component libraries.
To bounce around a lot.
Yeah, and I think that's good. Like you don't have to necessarily think of it as I need to have a specific bucket and dive deep into that one bucket. You can have a larger bucket and then get interested in different things within that and share your knowledge and your experience with all these different topics that are somewhat related.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, you kind of nailed it when you said sharing experiences. Like that's where some of the best conference talks and sort of things can come from, is when people just share their own experience. Maybe it was building something, maybe it's a personal story. That can be a really powerful thing to build off of.
So if the people out there that are interested in speaking at a conference, potentially, maybe you'll think of them, that, you know, you got to have something, right, for your first time. It doesn't mean you as a person need to only ever think about, like, prototypes in JavaScript was one of Dave's example earlier. Like that, you know, maybe that could be a talk. But and then how would you pick it? Would you pick, like, if there was two ways to do this, and maybe there's more, would you pick something that you already know people are talking about and care about, or would you pick something that's personal to you?
I think that the best sort of talks come at the intersections of technology and, like, personal interests. And that's where you can find people who are talking about, like, furniture making and how that relates to UX. Or I've just seen so many good talks where people kind of interweave personal stories or personal interests with technology. And I find that that is kind of the most valuable, because you can create these connections that people wouldn't otherwise see from the web. That you wouldn't otherwise see from, like, a technical tutorial blog post. But, like, that's what I think is really unique in conference talks specifically, is how, what I like to think is, how is this experience different than a blog post? Like, how is the audience getting something that they wouldn't from just reading a tutorial, like, with steps in it? It's sort of a different interaction there, because nobody goes to a conference, like, completely learn a technical skill. They need to go home and just dig deep and work on it and create things that way. But a conference introduces these new concepts and ideas that people can then grow on as they take that away and back to their company.
It's a very nice sentiment, right? It's true that you don't come home from a conference twice as smart as you got there, or whatever, like, with specific technical skills. And it happens right and left, doesn't it? You sit down for a talk and they're just like, all right, we're going to cover every single feature jQuery has to offer. Step, yeah, you know, one, attribute changing, B, binding, or whatever. It's just like an alphabet soup of what something can do. And it's like, that's not the right form, not to crap on somebody's talk or whatever, but if you just told a story, it might be 10 times more powerful and memorable.
Yeah. Even with more technical talks, like, if you say, like, this binding thing, and then someone is introduced to that for the first time, they can then go and take a note and then dive deeper later into it. And that's what's really cool about conferences. A lot of these talks are sort of introducing these new concepts and ideas that people might not be aware of. So that, I think, is, like, one of the good values of kind of going to the conferences and staying on top of this industry.
People will definitely know about image optimization.
That's the goal.
Hopefully they'll dig into some of that stuff as soon as they get home. What do you think, Crystal?
Yeah, no, I you know, what Eunice said was really kind of right on. It's absolutely, you don't want to, like, go to a conference and just have kind of a checklist sort of talk of 20, 30, whatever things that you need to go ahead and do. It's the stories, or, you know, the other kinds of anecdotes or even interactive moments that really kind of build kind of an understanding of the concept, and people go home inspired and they come up with their own interpretation of what they should do next. Like, that's really, to me, what makes it interesting. Is helping people kind of make this concept their own and grow off of it.
I think an event apart is also uniquely good at this, because the people who an event apart gets, like, on the lineup tend to have a lot of speaking experience. They tend to be people who speak in sort of, like, higher level perspective on the subject of the web. So I think that this conference specifically, I've never attended before. I'm really excited to attend. I've always wanted to attend. But this conference specifically is going to give that sort of, like, overall excitement about the web and inspire people to sort of dig into some of these concepts a little bit more on their own.
Android is specifically the team you work on. I don't know, you know, feel free to say or not say whatever. I know you're not solely in charge of telling us about the future of Android, so we won't do that. But, like, how does your job at Google and this onboarding stuff kind of intersect, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. So within Android, I've been working on Android Wear, and recently we just launched, like, a big OS update for Android Wear. And that definitely intersects a lot with onboarding because it's a new interaction paradigm, still relatively new. Wearables are on their own, kind of just a space that people aren't as familiar with. So of course, there's a lot of consideration that I bring to the product in terms of onboarding, continuing education, guidance. Even setup flows are always fun when you're trying to set up another device with a mobile phone app. So there's a lot, I think, that my experience with onboarding has been able to help me contribute back to the product.
Fantastic. And Una, you said, or specifically about onboarding new employees and stuff, is that what you're working on right now for DigitalOcean, or do you have other projects?
Yeah, that's part of it. We're also right now working on improving just like developer life internally. So how do we improve the test suite? How do we get like CSS metrics? How do we get accessibility metrics and like making sure that people aren't introducing new accessibility errors? So that's kind of like what my team has been working on lately.
Dev life,
yeah. Making it better. It's fun to be able to go to your coworkers and say, hi, I'm here to make your life easier. What do you
That's cool. That's pretty cool. I love it. I had an onboarding experience recently. I was at Sarah Drasner's house. We just was out. I happened to be out in Denver. She lives in Denver now, and she. This is a Google thing, I guess. Dave, don't you have a? Do you have one? An Oculus or a
I do.
A Vive.
It's the old dev kit for the Oculus.
Oh, cool. She had the Vive, I guess, the HTC Vive thing. And she's just like, can't wait to see what you guys do on the tilt brush. I'm like, what is that? And so we strapped that thing on. Have you guys put one of these things on, an Oculus Rift or a Vive?
Oh, it's not yet. But
it's been a while. I think I did it like a gaming conference a while back.
I did I think it might have been the HTC Vive. It was a VR roller coaster, and I'm a very emotive person, so people loved watching me just sit and feel like I was on a roller coaster, just in a chair in a room. But it was a really cool experience.
Yeah, yeah. It was my first one because I've been the first. You know, you hear so many people talk about it. Right? It's like a thing in our industry at the moment. You know, and we actually are having a show coming up about it specifically. But it reminded me of onboarding because. So I don't know. There's lots of stuff you can do, right? You can ride a roller coaster apparently, and there's games and stuff. But the one app from Google that happened to, that Sarah fired up was called Tilt Brush. Have you done this one, Dave?
Yeah, well, I've seen lots of videos, and that sounds dorky that I said that, but yes.
You haven't actually done it. You just watch people on YouTube do it.
I just watch a lot of YouTubes about it, so yeah, pretty much an expert. Go ahead.
It was nuts, because I just felt like a little bit of change inside me, because I've been a little bit of a naysayer of like how important I feel like VR is to the future of the web or something. I've been a little bit like, oh, whatever, you know, like it's just a thing. You got to strap a thing on your face. It's annoying. It's... whatever, but it was quite the experience strapping that thing on, and you just wherever you move your hands, you need all these tools and stuff. I don't know. I just did the world's worst explanation of it, but you know, you have these two things in your hand, and one of them is kind of like a paintbrush, and the other one's kind of like you choose what tool you're using and stuff. It's like the interface for the app, and there's kind of like I don't know. Maybe we didn't fire up the app for the first time, but when I strapped it on, there is no onboarding. It doesn't teach you how to use the thing. It's just it's your body, so it's just kind of like incredibly automatically intuitive. You like rotate these controls in the world and point at stuff and do stuff. It's amazing.
I think that in itself is a form of onboarding. You know, creative tools like that sort of stuff, they kind of have it easy because you can immediately see feedback of what you're doing. So the onboarding there is a bit like, oh, I move my hand. Oh, it makes a mark. Cool. I wonder what else I can do. And you start playing around with the controls or the tools and trying to see what else you can make. And you're like, oh man, that does that. Like it's low risk and it's super exciting.
Yeah, right. You can't just be like, I scrolled down and I made 10 droplets.
Like that's not... But I do think this is kind of akin to something like Photoshop, where you don't really have much onboarding and you kind of have to figure it out on your own. So you kind of have to turn to the internet and Google for all the things that you need. yeah, kind of, I don't know. I don't know if it has great onboarding that you just kind of have to like dive in, because there might be a feature that you're not sure exists, but it could help make your creation magical, like glitter or something.
Right, right. And you had no idea that it was even there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a need for some of these to understand that you kind of don't know what you don't know until you know it, right? You play around, you're like, oh, I kind of get a sense. Now I want to dive in deeper. And that's where having something like good in-product on-demand help or assistance is actually part of an onboarding strategy, right? Because you can let people play around and figure out what they want to kind of do next. And then they have a shared language and they can go and start searching for the things that will kind of empower them to level up, as it were.
Yeah, so when you be hands off on purpose because you know that you have good docs awaiting them.
Yeah, yeah, it's all dependent on the product, but it sounds like Tilt Brush is pretty low risk. Like you can kind of just fly around, and I don't know. I'd love to see some of your doodles, I guess, of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't make anything that interesting. It takes a minute to realize that you're not like, to me, and apparently, I mean, Sarah's watched like all kinds of people have different, like what's the first thing that they do in there? Like what was the first thing they found confusing and overcame, I guess? For me, it was the like, you're not just like drawing in 2D in a 3D world. Like you're not just like drawing a painting, but you happen to be able to awful. Walk around it. It's like, no, you actually are painting in 3D. So like if you make a spiral or something, it's like if you've made a little mountain, you could, I don't know. It's very hard to describe. Wherever your hand is, that's where it's in 3D space. That's what's getting painted.
It's really fun to watch people do this too. Last year at South by Southwest, there was like a live Tilt Brush thing because it was brand new. And it was just this giant screen behind a person that was just like walking around, like they were dancing and they were doing this live painting. It was really, really cool to see that.
Yeah. They did think about the experience of watching, because it's one thing to just watch the person who's doing it, just their body moving around and stuff, but it does project onto a 2D screen and you see what they see in 3D. You know, so it is kind of satisfying it's a living room activity. It's not totally, it's not like you're still seeing what they're building in there. It's not as immersive as being in the 3D space, but.
But hey, it's to go back to my favorite subject, like that's a form of fun onboarding too. Now those people who watched you, they kind of have a sense of what's going on, and maybe they'll be even better when they jump in for the first time. So it's kind of, yeah.
Like voyeuristic onboarding.
Exactly. Like that term. TM.
I bet that's pretty good.
Done. Yeah. Product name.
That sounds like a book name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that what Snapchat is? You know, like the first time you learn about Snapchat filters, it's because you're doing a selfie with somebody and they're like, they put the rabbit ears one on or whatever. And you're like, oh, what? That's amazing. I want that.
No, that's so true. Or someone sends you a picture and you're like, where'd you get that filter?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have a dog tongue.
Voyeuristic onboarding. It's your new thing. I've seen your tongue. It doesn't look anything like that.
That is not a real tongue. Tell me how you did this.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by CodePen Pro Teams. We call them Pro Teams because it kind of has everybody who's a member of that team is automatically pro. So this is the way that it works. You sign up for a pro team. There's one person who's an owner of that team, like your boss or you or whatever. You are the owner and you can give anybody you want an offer to be on your team, and they accept it or decline it or whatever there. But let's say they accept it. They're on your team and they're pro. So when they're using CodePen, they're automatically pro. And everybody uses CodePen. Once you're on a team, you use it in different contexts. So you just, right in the menu bar, you can switch between the contexts. Am I using CodePen as myself, or am I using CodePen on behalf of my team? I'm in the team context or the personal context. And if you're using it in the team context, you create a pen, it's owned by the team. Anybody else who's on that team can look at that pen, edit that pen, even if it's private, add to a collection or edit a post. You're all working together. You all have access to the same things, and everybody's pro. So you get all the pro features, but you're only billed once. And you know, you go 5, 10, 15, 20, as many people as you want on your team. One person bills, everybody gets to be pro, even in their personal setting, their personal context. But the pro is team. The team is pro as well.
I have a question. Back to kind of talks and giving talks and things like that and having a thing. What happens if somebody starts treading on your thing? And maybe they're giving some bad advice or some things you maybe don't exactly agree with. What do you do? Do you get possessive? Do you get angry? Do you get mad? Do you flame them in a blog post? What's the correct reaction? Or does it even matter?
So I think a lot of people on the web do get kind of like antsy about that. But what I want to see is more collaboration. I think when people have similar interests but come at it from different backgrounds, you can get some really, really cool collabs and like projects that you're both kind of building together. And even though someone else is kind of talking about the same thing you can still learn a lot from each other.
Yeah, I think the audience benefits from multiple viewpoints on the same subject. I mean, it's one thing if someone's going to be out there promoting like the darkest of the dark patterns, and then you can have a dialogue about that. But I think it's really great to me when another speaker kind of starts getting into that territory, because whether they come before or after me, whether it's at the same conference or a different, like you can build off of it and you can, it just helps solidify those concepts in people's minds.
And you're still promoting it. Like you're both promoting this idea, and that's even better for the kind of like your cause as a speaker.
Yeah.
I would think if somebody was all the way wrong about something,
yeah,
that somebody
they're
else
wrong, then you probably want to write a blog post about like, here's a misconception. Don't call anyone out. Don't say anything specific, but like a blog post.
Oh, that's tasteful, right? Just be like, I've seen a misconception going around without being a jerk. I would think if they're really, really wrong, that you could, somebody else will probably do that. That's kind of my tactic.
There's also like DMs. If it's like, yeah, hey, I just want to let you know, I think that this thing, because of this evidence, might not be accurate.
Right. I would come prepared with a demo or whatever, like evidence to the contrary, right?
So, and then they might thank you. No. Like, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you'd hope so. This is a good question, Dave. What are you?
Well, I think Yuna said, just, you know, I think I've seen like this play out in both ways. You know, it's somebody had like their thing co-opted, kind of like somebody just was like, it's my thing now, you know, and they're like, hey, that was my thing. And I don't know how to feel. I don't care, but I like also don't know how to feel. But the reverse, you know, it's not a big deal that happened, because like information should be shared. But I think it was like taken with like no attribution or little to no. And so I think that caused that person to be like, hey, that's not, you didn't.
I guess there's levels, right? I mean, you're talking that they just like took their slides and gave the talk with their slides.
almost took the slides and was like, I made it. Yes, I made it. What is that, XKCD? Or maybe it's a different thing. It's like somebody gets like, hey, cheers this thing. And then it's like, it's my thing. I made the thing. There's a comic I'm describing.
Bad probably, mouth comic.
Madmouthcomics.com/Dave Rupert. I don't know. It's interesting. But then I guess here's kind of the reverse, a toxic byproduct possibly. But does too many people having a thing, like everyone's striving for that Book Apart title, does that create a nauseating environment? Like does it sort of like, oh gosh, they're trying to sell me on this, you know, I don't know, something driven development that I just don't have the time for?
Well, I think if a lot of people are talking about a subject, there's a reason for it.
All right.
And I also think that's kind of part of the conference curation process, is you don't want to have too much of the same topic. So I guess it's one thing if a lot of people are talking about on the web or on Twitters or whatever, that's probably a good thing. Like if there's a lot to it, people are discussing it, it's a topic that will get a lot of eyes on it and might advance through that conversation. But I don't think that you see this as often at conferences per se. Hopefully.
That's a big one I think about, though. Like there's topics that are hot right now just because they are, And then if somebody was getting into talking, that they maybe they just feel like, you know what, I'm just going to pick that because that's clearly what people care about now. And I've even, you know, like for example, how CSS DevConf is one that I've spoken at before. A number of times they have an open call for submissions. And then part of the process is that you anonymously vote on them, anonymously on both sides. The person voting on them is anonymous, but also you're only voting on the title and description of the talk, not who's giving it. And it seems like when there's a hot topic and you're looking through them, because often there's like hundreds of submissions that you're looking through and voting on, that the things that are hot topics, there'll be like 15 submissions along that topic. Mm. And I'm like, I'm going to vote for those because that's hot right now. I want to hear about that. So I tend to pick things like that, which is not like you may not have a story then. I feel like the danger there is that it's hard to make it personal because you just picked it based on its popularity, not its importance to you.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, for conference talks, it's like I like to do the things that aren't being covered by 20 other people because, I'm pretty sure that probably half of those people are going to have maybe more research on it than I do. So, you know, I think for me, that's kind of a signal that like maybe that's enough and maybe I should focus on you know, covering some stuff that's not
you shy away from.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I just think, yeah, I think for a group of or an audience, like, you know, what's going to be most energizing for them to walk away from a conference with just like one kind of tunnel vision approach to topics or concepts, or to have a myriad of things and they can sort of sort out what's going to be the most interesting for them to focus on.
That kind of leads me to my next question, which I have prepared questions for this. if you're like, okay, I'm going to go kind of outside the fold of the popularity index or whatever. I'm going to go two standard deviations away from what's cool. What happens if no one's interested in your thing? Like, let's say you're into, I don't know, Arduinos that render really bad websites or something. I don't know. And no one cares about this. Like, did I pick a bad thing? Am I passionate about something that no one else is interested in? Or is it just so niche that I now don't have broad appeal? Balancing like my interest in being like a conference speaker or having interesting talks and things like that. How do I do that?
So I think that a good example of like what you bring up kind of happened with React. And the first time that anyone heard us talk about React, it was at JSConf US. And it just got like made fun of, to be frank. Like people were just like, this is like ridiculous. Why would I ever want to write my CSS this way? And now everyone's using React. So you might think a topic is kind of like weird and niche, but it might still help someone or like teach somebody something, even though like the whole topic is not super relevant to their needs. So I like to see those like standard deviations away from the norm kind of talks. I think it's really interesting. I was talking to a conference organizer last year, and he essentially said that what he looks for in conference talks is like three things. The first is something that teaches people something. The second is something that is entertaining. Like if somebody can just kind of like sit there and be entertained by a technical concept. And the third is that it's inspirational. So what he looked for is at least two of those three things when choosing conference talks: the educational, inspirational, or entertaining. So I like to kind of frame conference talks around those three things, regardless of the topic.
Crystal, how do you feel? How do you? Is the fringe the death zone?
No, I think the fringe is possibly the largest opportunity because you have a, you know, without everyone else having defined kind of where the topic tends to focus, you can start to experiment more, right? You have a little bit more leeway to try new ways of framing the problem or interesting stories to tell or kind of along the lines of making it entertaining, right? You can throw in some exercises or activities to try and pull out some cool concepts from that. So I think the fringe is where you have the most opportunity to maybe be yourself and define it for yourself, and that can be really that could be really fun, I think. And yeah, along those lines, like when it comes to figuring out whether or not there will be enough interest, like you can always prepare things in advance. You can run mini workshops with your team on the topic. You can do blog posts and see kind of what the reaction from those are. There are ways to sort of like seed out that concept too and see, you know, whether there's uptake from the world on it.
That's a good litmus test. Like if you write a blog post, see if people are reacting to it or sharing it. Probably like a good sign that it's a topic to bring to more people.
Yeah,
it really is. That's for sure. Because it's like 100% overlap. Like if a whole bunch of people like it, it's probably really will make a good conference talk. And if you get crickets, it's just like, hey, I'm so sorry, self. It wasn't a good idea, self. You know, like.
It's also good to run by any conference talk with people that you trust and know, like your coworkers or friend group or a local meetup first, to kind of gauge reaction there.
Yeah.
Are you talking like deliver it or just even pitch the idea?
Both. Like delivering, wow. I think, could be a good sort of exercise regardless of topic. And yeah, I guess pitching, you could just pitch to anyone. Pitch to people in a Slack group that you're in that's like a technical Slack group. Would you want to hear a talk about this thing? And people tend to be pretty honest.
My favorite lo-fi talk fleshing out is the like just open like 30 tabs in a row about that thing that's like loosely a guide through your thing. And a tab can be anything. You know, it could be like a JPEG that you dragged onto a tab or whatever. And then you just tab through the tabs. You know, then you haven't invested like a week in a keynote or whatever. That kind of works. Anyway. Bad tip.
What if you lose your tabs? Oh. What if your computer closes and you've...
that's why. It was a scratch pad anyway. Let's do it again.
There's this app called OneTab, I think, that I use. Yeah. And it's pretty good.
I've always... Because I have the too many tabs problem for sure. And I keep trying browser extensions that promise to save me from all the tabs. But then I install it and I'm like, but I like all the tabs. Don't close my tabs. Yeah.
Let me tell you the beauty of Microsoft Edge's new Set Tab Asides feature, or as I call it, the actually got to go back to work feature. You just hit a button and they all stash for later.
That's one tab. It's like a Chrome extension that I use. It does the same thing. You click it, they're all gone. They go into this page and they're saved. And then you can click Restore All from like a certain date and you have all your tabs back.
Beautiful. It's beautiful.
This is what like my podcast is like. Like, look at this app or thing, and then you should take it and use it. I'm just basically throwing apps at people and just bloating their systems when they listen to this podcast. Sorry.
Endless memory leaks via Chrome extensions. No.
Why is my computer slow?
I listen to Eunice's podcast, and now my laptop battery lasts.
You won't believe how many apps I have.
My latest thing is to be like, get them out of tabs, but into apps that basically are tabs, which is like, so I use Trello a lot. So I downloaded this one called Pause that just like, then it's not in my browser. It's just a separate app, but it's basically just an elaborate web wrapper around Trello, you know? And I was like, oh, I love that. I'm going to switch to TweetDeck so I can get Twitter out of a tab. And I'm going to switch to Mailplane so I can get Gmail out of a tab.
Here you go. Run all the operations on your system.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why it feels better, but it just does. Because then you can't accidentally like Control W it for one thing. Like if you do, it just closes, but it's not actually closed. You could just open it again. Whereas a browser tab's got to like reload its whole life. Anyway, sweet. So I like the sentiment about the three things which you got from some other organizer or whatever. I've heard. I think entertaining being kind of a big one. Like if your talk is super dry. even if it's super educational, that's kind of a bummer, isn't it? Or is that just a personal bias? I feel like you don't have to tell jokes if you're not good at joke telling, but if there's like no fun at all in your talk, ugh.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think some people just happen to be better like orators than other people. And those people tend to like do conference talks because they tend to naturally be good at it. And it sucks like seeing someone who's a brilliant developer that is just not as like easygoing on stage when they're trying to explain their like really cool application or like really cool thing that they created. So like again, collaboration between people could be great for that. You do like a dual talk and like have somebody who's maybe a little bit more experienced at speaking kind of help this person to be more comfortable on stage. I've done this with a coworker before, I think it was like 2 years ago now, where we did like a dual talk and it was the two of us. And I think it turned out really well because you kind of have like this banter that you can present to the audience. But, you know, dual talks can go really great or really poorly. It just depends.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've definitely kind of seen both, I guess. But I lean towards not doing it for a talk, but yes, doing it for like a lot of other type of stuff. Like, I don't know. I know that was a little vague, but I used to do a lot of screencasts and I started being like, this is so boring just to listen to me go, bah, 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 bah. And then I started doing them with two people. And with the back and forth and you're looking at the screen, there's so much more going on there. I could see it working for a conference talk though. It just feels like a lot more work because then I can't just I got to work on my slides and just open it up and do it. I have to like, oh, is Jan available on Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. where we can get together and work on?
Yeah, it's definitely an art form. I've done a couple.
Have you really?
Dual talk. I have not on a stage as big as an Event Apart, but I've done one for like a South by Southwest Ventures. It was like in Las Vegas. Great time. But yeah, it's definitely tricky. Like I think one of the pieces of advice we got for a dual talk was, you know, if you had someone that's kind of the main speaker and then you have the other person who's focused on almost like color commentary or something so that people always have one person they really need to focus on, but the other person's kind of adding additional dimension to it. But it is tricky. And you're absolutely right. You can't just kind of roll out of bed one morning and start, you know, hacking your slides with the new brilliant idea you had in your dreams. You kind of had to then call that person at 4 a.m. and tell them all your amazing new ideas and hope that they don't kind of quit your talk.
I wish that's how it worked. Roll out of bed, talk's all done in my head. That's a dream right there.
All right, cool. So I guess we'll sort of wrap up by mentioning again that you know, part of the theme here is that I and Una and Crystal will all be at Event Apart Seattle coming up. When is that? April 3rd through 5th. So you can see all of us talk about our thing and watch us just be amazing on stage and just the world.
Hanging out, having things. Yeah.
And have the world just immediately adopt our ideas overnight.
That's good. Well, thank y'all so much for coming on. Before we go, how can people find you on the internet and give you money? We'll start with Crystal.
Yeah, you can find me at chrishiggins.com, K-R-Y-S-H-I-G-G-I-N-S, and no money needed there.
There's an Etsy shop, okay. Though.
Oh, yeah, there is. I do have an Etsy shop for watercolor paintings. That's also kind of linked off from my site. Yeah, if you like watercolors and originals or prints, I do that as kind of my, I guess, third job on the side.
Oh, fun. Una, how can people follow you or give you money?
You can find me on the internet at UNA is my Twitter handle, like my GitHub, I think. Most things, I'm just Una, U-N-A. Website is una.im. Listen to my podcast, I guess, toolsday.io. I have an awesome co-host, Chris Donaraj. We try to get episodes out every week. Yeah, just kind of follow those accounts, I guess. Share. I think sharing is more valuable than anything. So that would be awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank y'all so much for coming on. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this and your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star heart favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. Speaking of, I think we have a special announcement there.
Hey, everybody. You know, we have a job board at Shop Talk Show. That's shoptalkshow.com/jobs. We want to tell you about one job in particularly that looks really great. It's at a place called Express Scripts, and not like scripts like JavaScript, scripts like your doctor gives you to get medicine. So it's a website where they say, manage your medicine your way, order and refill your medicine from home or on the go. We're not advertising the website, we're advertising it working with them. They're looking for a senior UI developer in Austin, Texas. You know, a little town in Texas where Dave happens to live on this show. Very cool town. Love Austin. They're looking for a senior UI developer. Senior, so like not fresh out of the gate, unfortunately, for this one. Sometimes there's Joe's jobs available, but they're looking for people with, you know, years of experience, familiar with building single page web apps, you know, React, Angular type of stuff. They're interested in you knowing how to do testing, work in an agile environment, using build tools, using code splitting and bundlers. You know, you should know CSS, you should be comfortable in GitLand, the normal HTML, CSS, and JavaScript kind of workflow thing, your UI, your front end. Bonus points if you're into accessibility, bonus points for knowing Node, bonus points for being involved in the community, things like that. And they have some information here about what specific technologies if you need to know more about that. Follow the link in the show notes for this for sure. And possibly become a new senior UI developer in Austin, Texas at Express Scripts. Again, the link's in the show notes.
And if you hate your t-shirt, head over to shoptalkshow.com/shop. Get a brand new t-shirt. Those may be going away soon. We don't know. We're still figuring that out. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Shoptalkshow.com